Good Sunday morning and welcome to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. I'm your host, Larry Vetter, and my guest this morning is Dennis Hickman, Kent County Sheriff. Good morning, Dennis. How are you?
Good morning.
Thanks so much for joining me. So I want to get right into it. This is an elected position, and you are basically the new sheriff, right? You were elected in 2022?
Yes. Before me, my predecessor, John Price, was sheriff for 28 years. So my entire career at the sheriff's office was under him.
Okay, so you are familiar with the sheriff's office, obviously,
by absolutely
working there for a long time already. Yeah. How long are you elected for?
The sheriff term is for 4 years.
4 years. So every 4 years, you have to run another election campaign again.
Yeah. Well, I was very fortunate the last campaign because nobody ran against me, but it's still a stressful time. You just during that time, you don't know if anybody's going to file or something of that nature. And honestly, it's one of those positions where if I didn't get it, then I might not be employed there any longer. So it was certainly a concerning time for me because I'm not quite to my retirement time frame yet. But I was very fortunate nobody ran against me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I wouldn't have thought of something like that. That would be a concerning issue if you didn't win the election and you're out of work, basically.
Pretty much. That's what would happen.
So what I always wanted to ask is that for the most part, when you think of people that are elected officials, they're positions where you don't have to have a particular skill set. Even positions like delegates or congresspeople or senators or anything, they don't necessarily have to have a particular skill set other than they need to be organized and somewhat well-spoken and obviously well-financed for them. But it doesn't matter what their background is. They could be a doctor. They could be a spa technician. They could be anything, and they can run for it. But for a position like, there's a couple positions, and I think of sheriff as one of them, and like a judge, another, where you require to have a certain skill set. I mean, to be a sheriff, you really need to know about law enforcement. So I often wonder if somebody like me, who has absolutely no idea about law enforcement, and I decided I want to run for sheriff, and I find enough backing to do that and won that, it just doesn't feel right. It almost feels like there should be a requirement. So is there some sort of requirement? Like when you go to whatever party you belong to and say, I want to run for sheriff, do they say, well, what are your qualifications? We really need to know you can do this first, or do they not really care?
Well, you had mentioned like what party. No, it's I really didn't have any conversations with, in my case, the Republican Party. I filed for sheriff. I filled out all my own paperwork. I have a good friend of mine that's an accountant in the area. We went to college together, and he's my treasurer. And as for the office of the sheriff, yes, you could run for sheriff, Larry. You really could. One would expect, the voters of the county would recognize a qualified individual and would vote for that individual that they feel is best suited for that position. You know, the office of the sheriff is, in law enforcement, is really the only position that answers directly to the people. And I think that's very important, because every 4 years, if the people don't like the job that I'm doing, then they'll put somebody else in there.
Yeah, that's a big assumption, though, the thinking that the people will make a decision based on the best qualified, because often I scratch my head and wonder what some of the elected officials we have is, how'd they get in, and very often it's...
I would say that maybe on a national level, I would say, but when I look at Kent County, I think we got a good base of educated voters that recognize who's best suited for those positions, and, sometimes I think in some of those cases it's popularity contests. But also I think that they recognize, who's the best suited for those positions. And I was just very thankful that, I didn't have anybody run against me for my first term here. And I'm very thankful for that. But either way, if I did, I would hope that the citizens and also my coworkers that I have at the sheriff's office would advocate for me, and they would hopefully put me in that position.
All right. So, yeah, in this particular case, it obviously was a good thing because you did have quite an extensive career in the law enforcement, right?
Yes. I've only been with the Kent County Sheriff's Office.
Okay.
I started my career as all deputies do, pretty much, are in the patrol division. And from there, I went to as a school resource officer at the Kent County High School. I did that for 4 years. And that was a really interesting position. I mean, it's nice now because those... I call them kids, and I really shouldn't, but those kids that were there at the time, well, I employ some of them at the sheriff's office, and also I see them out in the community. They're anywhere from 31 to nearly 35 years old now, and they see me, and they recognize me, and oftentimes they say, Officer Hickman, you know, that's what they'll say, and they'll shout it out. So that was a really fun position for me to be in, and felt like at times you felt like you're really connecting with the kids and trying to help bridge that gap sometimes, because there could be such negative connotations with law enforcement, especially on a national level. And and I think here locally, they because, you know, I'm shopping in the same grocery stores as everyone, you know what I mean? I'm my kids are in the school system here, you know, so they recognize me as just another citizen that's here, and they recognize that I'm fair and impartial about things, and here I have a number of people that say, man, I'm glad that you're the sheriff, because you're a fair guy.
So what exactly are the duties of a sheriff? You know, when you're elected in that position, you know, day one, I'm in there, and just you go through a list and say, all right, these are all my jobs that I need to do.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like that list gets longer and longer as I've been there. But we are the primary law enforcement agency for the county. Okay. Is what we are. That's first and foremost. Now, it changes depending on the areas that you're in. And all cases on the Eastern Shore, the sheriff's offices are the primary law enforcement agencies that handles everything from top to bottom, 911 calls, accidents, and then also when you get across the bridge, they're only doing warrants and court security and things of that nature, whereas we're a full-service sheriff's office. So, yes, handle 911 calls. We're the ones that, if it's out in the county, we're the ones that are probably going to be the ones answering the call. We're stopping cars on the road for speeding. I can tell you, especially in our towns, they want us in there all the time. They want people to slow down. You know, we're just not out there deciding that we want to write people's citations. We actually have a lot of citizens that ask us to do these things, not just in the towns, but all over. I mean, we have people that are even outside of town, that not too far, just outside of Chestertown. I got a guy that calls me all the time. He says, you got to do something out here. So we'll put a person out there every once in a while. And we also have all the warrants and things that come from the courts. We serve those. I did bring along my annual report. It looks like we had last year over 400 arrests that we did out of our office. So and that includes everything from an on-view arrest. So you might be able to make an arrest for a person that has drugs on their person, or it could be from an assault or whatever else that might be. But we also we do evictions. That's another thing that we do. So we really do pretty much the entire gamut of law enforcement here at the Kent County Sheriff's Office. From the people that I have, 26 deputies and three
26
civilian
deputies
sheriffs
altogether.
Yeah, okay. And I'm counting contractual deputies as well that are just handle court security is another part that we do. So we do a lot of things here in the county. With you know, it's a small county population wise, but we also are spread out. You know, I had a question for you. How many people do you think we would have on a shift at, let's say, 11 o'clock at night?
I would have absolutely no clue. That's why I can't run for sheriff.
So I posed that question a number of times, especially with different organizations that ask us to come in and talk to them about security awareness, things of that nature. And I'll get the answers of anywhere from 5 to 10, 15. And I say, oftentimes, if we're fully staffed for that shift, 3. Mm-hmm. So as you can imagine, the territory that we're covering from, you know, Eastern Neck Island, all the way to the Delaware line, is Cecil County line. It's a lot of land that we're covering, so we're spread out. So there could be some, it could be interesting sometimes for some of the deputies if they're involved in an incident with an individual and they're waiting for their backup to get there, which could be sometimes 10 minutes to get there.
Sure, if you have a serious incident in the middle of the night, I can see where all three would be tied up at the same time with one incident. And if something else pops up on the other end of the county, that would present a large problem.
Yeah. We do have the state police that has a presence office in the county. Many times they'll have two, but they're covering from all of Kent County all the way to the Centerville Barrack, which is part of Queen Anne's County. So part of Queen Anne's and all of Kent, and they'll have two.
So anytime I would see a police car with Kent County written on the side, that would be under your jurisdiction?
Yes.
That'd be one of your workers?
Yeah, that's one of my people.
And then you correlate, I guess, with some of the local police departments, like Chestertown has its own police department. Are there other local police departments?
Rock Hall has a police department.
Yeah.
Three-man police department. They're not 24 hours, but they cover a lot of the time for the, and if there's incidents that occur that don't have to have immediate police response, then we'll get the information and then we'll hand it over to them. But yes, they do have three people as well down there.
All right, and then so essentially in this area, this particular Kent County, I should say. So there's the county police, which is yours. Then there's the local police, which is a couple of little spots, and then there's state police that are working here too. So those are the three types of different enforcement that you see around here.
Yeah,
and they all sort of center around the detention center area.
No, we're the only agency that's inside the detention center, along with so the detention center is a separate entity from me.
Okay.
So they have a warden, and whereas you'll see in some jurisdictions, just as close as Cecil, the sheriff is in charge of the jail as well.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a whole nother separate thing that they have, but usually they'll have a someone that's in charge of that. So the sheriff oversees it, but they'll have someone that acts as like a warden capacity to handle those functions. But we're the only agency that's out of the here at the jail. Chestertown has a police department in town, and Rock Hall has a works out of the town hall, but the police department area in Rock Hall as well.
All right, we're going to take a short break. You listen to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. We'll be right back.
Chester River Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, offers professional-grade multivitamins, nutritional supplements, medical supplies for all your medical needs, sound medical advice from people you trust, and all insurances are accepted. In addition, the expanded store carries a wide variety of gift items, including toys and gifts from the Eastern Shore. The staff is ready to help with your needs because at Chester River Pharmacy, you're treated like family. Chester River Pharmacy, where your health comes first. Visit them online at chesterriverpharmacy.com or call 410-810-3600.
At Compass Regional Hospice, we understand that a serious illness diagnosis affects all aspects of life for both the patient and the caregiver. Our comprehensive team approach to in-home care adds the support you need to maintain the highest quality of life. If you're struggling to find the balance of medical and emotional support, let our care system of nurses, social workers, and volunteers work for you. Call 443-262-4100 to see how Compass Regional Hospice can bring comfort and compassion to your family.
Prince Limousine is the area's premier service for all your transportation needs. Since 1994, they've provided prompt and professional service for all your live events. They can provide transportation for weddings, bachelor and bachelorette parties, birthdays, company events, event shuttle service, and airport and cruise terminal transportation. You just plan your event and leave the driving to Prince Limousine. Family owned and operated, call them at 410-778-4860 or visit PrinceLimoMD.com. Ride like royalty with Prince Limousine.
Prince Limousine celebrating 30 years in business.
Welcome back to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. I'm your host, Larry Vetter, and my guest this morning is Dennis Hickman, Kent County Sheriff. And Dennis, in the first part, we were talking a little bit about your background and some of the things that you do on a regular basis within the department. And it's a lot. It's more than I realize. You know, you do cover a big area. And I guess, for want of a better term, I know you're called a sheriff here, but you're almost like a police commissioner, and so is in a certain way of what I traditionally think of as a police commissioner. And you have that. And so I know you were saying that typically you have about three officers in an evening, which I guess really kind of surprises me a little bit.
Yeah.
It sounds like it. But how many officers do you have altogether that report to you?
Yeah, so I have So I said earlier I had 26. Now, when I say that number, I know so many times the older folks that have been here for so long, we have a swearing-in ceremony every 4 years, and they'll see all the deputies there at the courthouse, and they'll see a picture of it, and they'll start recalling back when Bartus Vickers was the sheriff, and they only had, I don't know what the number they say, five or so deputies. Why do you need so many deputies, things of that nature. But when I say the number of 26, what I'm saying is I also have a contractual employee that just works out at the high school. He's retired from this agency, but he's just interested in having a contractual position and only works when school's in session and things of that nature, so he's off in the summertime. I also have retired persons that are contractual employees that do court security. So two people that you would see as soon as you walk into the courthouse on Cross Street are two people that are employed under my office, and they're retired law enforcement, but they're also contractual employees. You're not really going to see those individuals out and about. They don't have a police car assigned to them or anything of that nature, and they're not out there making traffic stops or answering 911 calls or anything of that nature. And we also have another retired individual that handles just the security portion of the circuit court. So when court's in session, he's up there making sure we are handling our constitutional obligations of circuit court security. And we also have another individual that would be at our government building security. That's another contractual position. So I'm counting all of those people as well. Mm-hmm. The rest are, we have a number of divisions within the sheriff's office that many people might not really know about. So the patrol division is the main one that people really recognize. Mm-hmm. They're in the marked patrol cars. They're out there answering, again, 911 calls, stopping cars for speeding or whatever the infraction might be, things of that nature. But we also have individuals that are in the criminal investigation division. So those are, I have three in there. And those are persons that have a little bit more of a skill set of being able to investigate a little bit more of our serious crimes that come out. Obviously we don't have the crimes that where you came from in New York, but we do have, certain crimes that, occasionally we have homicides, that doesn't happen very often, but occasionally it does. But really more serious crimes for us are some of the bigger thefts, burglaries, which is going into somebody's house or storehouse, things of that nature. And oftentimes some of your assaults to include, sexual assault, or serious assaults of some sort, whether it be a weapon. Those guys handle those types of cases because they have the time to be able to, author search warrants and be able to interview suspects, things of that nature. I also have two individuals that are part of patrol division that are canines. So I have two dogs that they... dogs are trained in smelling drugs and in vehicles or a house or whatever else, but they're also a patrol dog. What that means is they are actually trained in bite work as well, and these dogs are amazing. The two I have are fantastic, great dispositions. The one dog that we have especially, that handler, he'll take her, it's a female Malinois, he'll take her even to a, we had a function recently at the high school, and he brought her out and all the kids are up there playing with her and everything else, and if you were to see her when she's doing bite work, you would wonder how in the world are these kids petting this dog. But she's fantastic. She's really great. So we have a nice dog just for community purposes. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be meeting with Heron Point later this month, and I'm going to have her come out as well, because a lot of times people like to see the dogs more than they like to see the people. So additionally, we have the services division, which handles the civil process, meaning papers that come from the courts. We also have, we're part of a Kent County Narcotics Task Force. Okay. So the Narcotics Task Force, which is based here in Chestertown for Kent County, is comprised of the State Police, the Sheriff's Office, Chestertown Police, Rock Hall Police Department, and the Department of Natural Resource Police. Now, Chestertown, the Sheriff's Office, and the state, they can actually contribute people to be a part of this organization. But they're handling the more, they're sort of going after the dealers, the persons that are actually, furnishing the drugs to individuals within in the county. So those guys are pretty busy. They're handling a lot of different cases. They just wrapped up a pretty big case with a number of indictments there. And so it tries to get some of those dealers off of our streets. Unfortunately, a lot of times in other person pops back up, but that's the game. They're constantly putting people away, and then somebody else is kind of popping back up. So that's the war on drugs, right? And
are narcotics a big problem in Kent County?
Surprisingly, yes. You know, as for like our overdose numbers last year, we had 50 overdoses that we know about.
50?
And
that you responded to?
Yes. So those are ones that...
Wow.
So we carry naloxone with us. So when there's an overdose, we're able to go there, and that helps to reverse opioid drugs. But unfortunately, what we're seeing now and the trend is... So the opioid drugs mixed with xylazine. Xylazine is an animal tranquilizer. It's never meant for human consumption or anything, but they're now mixing that in there, and it's causing some overdose deaths. So last year we had 4 overdose deaths. Obviously, one is too many, but there's a lot of organizations out here that are really trying to get the message out, really trying to get the naloxone out to try to hopefully combat this drug problem that we have. I mean, certain circles for individuals, they don't realize that it's there, but it's there. And other individuals, even people that have moved to this area from somewhere else, that wind up having maybe a family member or something that gets involved in that, they said, I never knew it was this bad. You know, so it's there. But I think it's there. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere, yeah. I mean, obviously, where I came from, there was a big issue with drug problems. It was just, you know, magnified. It's interesting because there are 2 counties. There are actually 4 counties on Long Island, but 2 counties are Brooklyn and Queens that are part of New York City. Most people don't realize that a section of Long Island actually is New York City. But then there are 2 counties. And one of the 2 counties is roughly the same amount of square miles as Kent County, except the difference being that we have about 18,000 people here. We have almost 3 million people there.
Right, right.
You know, so there's a bit of a difference when it comes to that. So obviously, any issue is magnified that much more.
Absolutely.
And drugs are a problem there. And I everywhere I go, it seems like when I go on vacation or go to different places, you always hear about it. It seems like it's universal. It's just a non-ending problem. And it's sad to even hear that. I mean, I'm actually kind of surprised to hear that we're 50 overdoses. Thankfully, only...
Those are the ones that we know about, Larry, because, I mean, honestly, there's been such a big campaign to get the naloxone out there for those. Oftentimes, the calls that we're getting is because they have now exhausted their opioid reversal drug that they have, which is oftentimes 2 doses, and now they're calling us to try to, with more, because sometimes it can take 4 or 5 different doses to get this person out of that condition that they're in. So
yeah, and these are primarily local residents and people coming into this area.
It knows no socioeconomic background whatsoever. It affects everybody.
Yeah, that's the one thing I've noticed, that it didn't matter. The socioeconomic background had no bearing whatsoever. In fact, sometimes it seemed like people with more money could afford to buy more drugs. It just seemed a little bit odd to me.
I just had a call just before I came over here. Actually, a young man that was a student when I worked out at the high school called me and said, he said, what can I do to help my sister? She's addicted and she just doesn't want to listen to me. So I, you know, turn him over to some different resources for him, you know, to try to get some help for her, because that's really what it's about, because she has an addiction problem and she really needs to have some help. So I turned him over actually to some peer support individuals from the county, and you can only hope for the positive outcome. But unfortunately, that individual has been through the different programs a number of times and just hasn't figured it out yet. So you see that a lot.
Yeah, no, I used to see it when my kids grew up in a comfortable area on Long Island, and it was amazing to me how many of their friends ended up addicted to heroin and a variety of other street drugs that you wouldn't expect from them. You would think that, well, it certainly had more than enough money not to have to do something like that. Nevertheless, they become addicted to it. And the sad part about it is definitely a lifelong issue. Even if you go through programs and you're taking care of yourself, you're an addict for life, you know, and it really kind of colors the way you look at the rest of your life and everything around you, and it's kind of sad. And I didn't mean to disrupt your train of thought.
Oh, that's
fine. I know
you're
going through some things.
The only other thing I was going to touch on is we also handle the individuals that are on our sex offender registry that are persons that are residents in the county. Oftentimes they're required, whether it be 4 times a year or twice a year, in the check with us, and we also receive overtime funds to be able to make sure that they're being compliant with the conditions of their registry. registry. So that's a job that's put on to the counties to have to do.
Do you have a SWAT team at all?
We do. Well, yeah. Yes, we do. It's considered a SWAT team based on the definition that the state of Maryland provides.
Okay.
But we really consider us more of a warrant service team. Yeah. You know, so we have eight guys that's led by one of my deputies that they have some special equipment that they wear, safety type equipment, also some hearing things, so protect your hearing. They're able to communicate with each other very well. And ballistic helmets, things of that nature. They also have long guns that they'll carry with these warrants, because they can be pretty risky at times. But when it comes time to serving a warrant, there's certain criteria that has to be met to be able to use that level of force with using what you say, quote, SWAT team. How many do they serve in the course of a year? I would say maybe a dozen, something of that nature. But the state has a number of requirements for training, so they are training once a month. Okay. Is what they do to train. So, I'm very happy with the job they do. And, it can be a touchy issue based on the level of force that's being used when doing that. But they do a very nice job.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a short break again. First, I'd like to thank my sponsors, Heron Point, Chester River Pharmacy, Compass Regional Hospice, and Prince Limousine. You're listening to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. We'll be right back.
Chester River Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, offers professional-grade multivitamins, nutritional supplements, medical supplies for all your medical needs, sound medical advice from people you trust, and all insurances are accepted. In addition, the expanded store carries a wide variety of gift items, including toys and gifts from the Eastern Shore. The staff is ready to help with your needs, because at Chester River Pharmacy, you're treated like family. Chester River Pharmacy, where your health comes first. Visit them online at chesterriverpharmacy.com or call 410-810-3600.
Prince Limousine is the area's premier service for all your transportation needs. Since 1994, they've provided prompt and professional service for all your live events. They can provide transportation for weddings, bachelor and bachelorette parties, birthdays, company events, event shuttle service, and airport and cruise terminal transportation. You just plan your event and leave the driving to Prince Limousine. Family owned and operated, call them at 410-778-4860 or visit PrinceLimoMD.com. Ride like royalty with Prince Limousine.
Prince Limousine, celebrating 30 years in business.
At Compass Regional Hospice, we understand that a serious illness diagnosis affects all aspects of life for both the patient and the caregiver. Our comprehensive team approach to in-home care adds the support you need to maintain the highest quality of life. If you're struggling to find the balance of medical and emotional support, let our care system of nurses, social workers, and volunteers work for you. Call 443-262-4100 to see how Compass Regional Hospice can bring comfort and compassion to your family.
At Heron Point of Chestertown, living Riverside isn't the most alluring aspect of your retirement lifestyle. It's the security you get with Axe Life Care. Having the retirement you always planned for. Take off for new adventures, meet fascinating residents, and find out how much easier, more enjoyable, and more secure life can be. Your long-term care is prearranged and guaranteed. Your nest egg is protected. Discover retirement living at Heron Point. Call us to learn more at 877-380-1360 or visit axeheronpoint.org.
Considerable cloudiness for today with a high 55 to 60. Partly cloudy tonight, low 35 to 40. Sunshine tomorrow, mid-60s. And Tuesday, more sunshine, 65 to 70. Wednesday, partly sunny, high near 70. From the Maryland Weather Center, this is meteorologist Bill Jackman. More details on the WCTR forecast, as well as local news and community events, online at WCTR.com, serving Kent and Queen Anne's counties for 60 years and counting.
Welcome back to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. I'm your host, Larry Vetter. My guest this morning is Dennis Hickman, Sheriff of Kent County, and we were talking a bit about your background at first, and we were talking a lot about the different types of services that you're responsible for in the last section. And I'd like to talk a little bit about the officers themselves and some of the things that you have to go through on a regular basis. And one of the trends that I noticed when I was in Long Island just before I left, is that the police departments that were out there, they did respond to similar type crimes that you did, except on a much, much larger scale, so there were many more of them. But all of the, many of the police departments were starting to get some pretty heavy-duty equipment. In fact, I remember the county that I worked at, that I lived in, which was the easternmost county of Long Island I was living in, and it wasn't quite as bad as the closer you got into New York City, the tougher it was. But they would just they got themselves a couple of these, for want of a better term, they looked like tanks. Mm-hmm. They were large pieces of equipment, four-wheel drive. They were bulletproof, bomb-proof, everything you could possibly think of proof. And they would bring them out, and if there were some sort of festival or something like that, they'd bring it out and they'd show it to people. I'd look at this thing and I'd say, it looks like we're ready to go to war with this thing. Yep. This thing was massive. And I always wondered, is that necessary?
Yeah.
Is it really necessary to have a beast like that? I know it's intimidating.
Sure.
You know, I can imagine what it'd be like if, you know, there's problem going on in the neighborhood and one of these things comes rolling down the road. I know I'd react. I'd go hide somewhere in a second. But how do you feel about that type of equipment?
So we don't have anything like that. I know even a number of different sheriff's offices on the Eastern Shore, they do. And oftentimes it came as an like a military order, like a, I guess, it's a repurposed military equipment that they've turned into. So I think police departments that have those, they do showcase them because I think people are curious and it's something that can be kind of neat to show people. I do think that there's, I do think there's a need for it occasionally. And the reason I say that is because, you know, what is that piece of equipment doing? Well, it's protecting a person inside of that. You know, these are ballistic vehicles that, you know, the glass, the outside, I mean, if it's shot, it's not getting through, unless, of course, you have some, you know, huge gun or something. You know, for the most part, things aren't getting through that. So if you have, there can be certain situations where that piece of equipment would be beneficial. You know, if you have a armed, barricaded person inside of a residence, maybe even with a hostage, whatever it might be, and you need to get as close as you can without, you know, endangering your officers or deputies, then yes, I think there's an absolute need for it. We don't have one. I'm not interested in getting one, but I will say the state police, they do have one. So there has been occasion over my over 23-year career at the sheriff's office that I we have asked them to help out with situations, and they have brought one of those things there. So I think under certain circumstances, I think it's needed. I think it's something that you should probably have for those what-if moments or in-case moments. But, you know, just for general policing, it's not really needed for that at all.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, I know we mentioned earlier in the broadcast that sometimes there's negative connotations to law enforcement. And I know that, you know, there have been some cases on television that have really were bad, you know, where they went really south, where, you know, obviously the police officers probably didn't act in their best interest. And I've always sort of believed that the average person that becomes a police officer is not going into it to be a bully and to break open heads and to push people around. But I think they actually really intend to do the right thing and to serve. And I have to, when I look at a police officer, I think of that person as really trying to do the right thing. I don't think he's somebody that's just going to look for a reason to arrest me or to give me a ticket or something. I think they're really trying to do the right thing. How does that impact, you know, when something really bad, like we were talking off the air about George Floyd, which obviously was a very bad situation right there. How does that impact the thought process and the day-to-day operation of the average police officer?
Tremendous impact. It really does, especially, you know, I will often say that, you know, for the most part, the police are their own worst enemies. So, you know, as a whole, you know, I mean, there will be some bad decisions that will be made, you know, whether it be in Minnesota or in Baltimore or wherever it is, and we're all looked at as being the same, you know, mm-hmm. which, you know, I've often told people, I said, you know, wherever you work, you have your good employees and they're not so good employees, you know, and that's no different than a police department or a sheriff's office. You know, I'd like to think that I have a lot of good people, you know, I got some people that work a lot harder than others, but we're certainly not out there trying to intend on violating anybody's rights. In some of those, you said something about George Floyd, and I'd often share with a number of citizens that, you know, during the COVID time, we have a lot of citizens coming up to us and saying, thank you for being out there. We appreciate it. Because, you know, there was a lot of people that were at home for that. We were not, you know, we were out there still handling calls. We were out there responding places. And it was a very uncertain time because we really didn't know. I mean, I know for me, I was concerned because I was afraid that I was going to bring sickness back to my family, you know, so I didn't know. I was concerned. Everybody was concerned. But we were out there doing our job. You know, we had a number of unintended deaths at the house. You know, what did the person die from? I don't know. It could be COVID. So at the time, we were all very concerned about contracting something and getting sick. So, I mean, during that time frame, there were a lot of people that were very appreciative of us being out there and doing our job. Unfortunately, when the George Floyd incident occurred, I've shared with a number of people that, you know, it was, I think it was the next day, I came up to Royal Farms, Chestertown, and I grabbed the door to open it up for somebody, for them to come out. And they looked at me and made an expression, and they decided to go out the other door because they didn't want me to hold the door for them. And I'm thinking to myself, man, what just happened here? You know, national incidents like that, they certainly affect all of us. And, however you feel about the situation, however it happened, I mean, there was the fallout for that particular incident was national, worldwide, right. You know, and even in the state of Maryland, they passed a number of police reform laws that law enforcement, it's not that they weren't, it's not as a whole, we weren't against having a more transparent type process. It's just the way that it was shoved down. It wasn't done the right way, but they were going to push it anyway because that was the time. They were now going to have police reform, and we're going to make sure that we keep all these police officers in check. So, there's establishment of an internal investigation division through the Attorney General's office. They now have prosecution powers to be able to prosecute the police. I can tell you that, not just my agency, but many police officers, they're concerned that if they wind up getting involved in a situation and for whatever reason that individual winds up dying, they feel like, well, I'm going to be prosecuted. Even though I'm trying to do the right things, I feel like I'm going to be prosecuted, and that's going to be my legacy as being in trouble in some way. So it winds up causing us as police as a whole to take a step back, not always take that immediate action. And you're seeing some of that. I think there was a different incident that was down in Caroline County where officers didn't wind up taking action. And me being in law enforcement, I often wonder, are they thinking about the other side of that as well? So sometimes that's, they're getting in trouble for the inaction of that they're taking. So it's a tough time for law enforcement. I certainly feel for the young people that are getting into it and they come into it wanting to do the right things. Now, look, let's be honest. When you're young, you get into it because what? You want to drive fast, wear a gun, and get bad guy, right? Mm-hmm. And as you get into it within that 5-year period, you really got a good understanding of what law enforcement is about. And, some people decide to get out, others decide to stay in and make it a career. And the ones that are in there making a career, they're trying to do the right things. They're trying to go home at night, that's important, but it's also important to be able to serve your community. And I think we do a great job in Kent County to be able to serve our community. I was a business major in college, and I tried to think of it as a business approach, and our citizens are the customers, and so we're trying to serve our customers. We're going to have to serve some people a certain way because, that's the way they're going to be. But overall, we're trying to make sure that that person is happy with the service that we're providing.
Yeah. Now, my experiences with the police, which are very minimal anyway, they're all great. They're all great. Everybody's been good. And I actually feel for you in a lot of ways because I know that if I'm surrounded by negative people for too long, I start to look at the world negatively. And I know that you're clients, I guess, for the most part, that you have to deal with in the enforcement part, they're pretty negative most of the time. It's got to be difficult. It's got to be very difficult to remain upbeat and to remain positive. Mm-hmm. And then when you have something nationally that just brings everybody down at the same time, and it is very unfair that, something that happened in Minnesota, people would take it out on you here. You're a totally different person. It's a totally different atmosphere, different
They've even changed our use of force here. They said our use of force needs to be necessary and proportional. We're not even really sure what that means.
Necessary and proportional. Yeah.
Necessary and proportional to what? So, you think about a New York case where the individual was, he was selling untaxed cigarettes front, and he wound up trying to effectuate an arrest, and he wound up dying.
Right.
That would be a big problem today here in Maryland because, the force that you're using, was it necessary proportional based on the untaxed cigarette? You know what I mean? So sometimes I tell my people, you got to pick your battles and decide on, you know, how's the best course of action. And of course, you know, the de-escalation word is out there for everyone. You know, I mean, we had a recent court case, and I'm not going to go into a whole lot of details, where the jury is understanding that, well, he didn't really try to de-escalate that situation too much. So they just elected for the resisting arrest as opposed to a second-degree assault charge on one of my deputies. But unfortunately, in the court setting, they're not always told that it was an attempted second-degree murder charge. And they weren't allowed to know those things about the individual. And already all of the intel bulletins that we've had about the individual and carrying guns and everything else, there might be a reason why my deputy did that. Yeah. But they weren't, unfortunately, they weren't able to know that. So they think that, oh, well, he didn't try to de-escalate that. Well, those individuals, you don't go in there and ask them. You go in there and tell them, because that's the kind of person that they are. But, of course, they weren't allowed to know that information. And, you know, that's unfortunate.
Court cases can skew things quite a bit in the wrong direction. All right, we're going to take a short break again. You're listening to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. We'll be right back.
Prince Limousine is the area's premier service for all your transportation needs. Since 1994, they've provided prompt and professional service for all your live events. They can provide transportation for weddings, bachelor and bachelorette parties, birthdays, company events, event shuttle service, and airport and cruise terminal transportation. You just plan your event and leave the driving to Prince Limousine. Family owned and operated, call them at 410-778-4860 or visit PrinceLimoMD.com. Ride like royalty with Prince Limousine.
Prince Limousine, celebrating 30 years in business.
At Heron Point of Chestertown, living Riverside isn't the most alluring aspect of your retirement lifestyle. It's the security you get with Axe Life Care. Having the retirement you always planned for. Take off for new adventures, meet fascinating residents, and find out how much easier, more enjoyable, and more secure life can be. Your long-term care is prearranged and guaranteed. Your nest egg is protected. Discover retirement living at Heron Point. Call us to learn more at 877-380-1360 or visit axeheronpoint.org. When it comes to disease prevention, immunizations are key. Getting vaccinated protects you and those around you. Chester River Pharmacy offers a wide range of vaccinations, including flu vaccines, measles vaccine, shingles vaccine, and COVID-19 vaccines. Our highly qualified staff can administer vaccines right here in the pharmacy. We offer convenient hours, so you can easily keep up to date on your immunizations. Call us today at 410-810-3600 and schedule your appointment today.
At Compass Regional Hospice, we understand that a serious illness diagnosis affects all aspects of life for both the patient and the caregiver. Our comprehensive team approach to in-home care adds the support you need to maintain the highest quality of life. If you're struggling to find the balance of medical and emotional support, let our care system of nurses, social workers, and volunteers work for you. Call 443-262-4100 to see how Compass Regional Hospice can bring comfort and compassion to your family.
Welcome back to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. I'm your host, Larry Vedder. My guest this morning is Dennis Hickman, Sheriff of Kent County. And Dennis, we've been talking a lot about your background. We've been talking about the types of services you have. And in the last section, we talked a little bit about the impact of some national issues and some of the political issues that go on everyday policing and you know, the good and the bad that have it in there. And I wanted to talk about it, that every area seems to have its sort of leaning towards a certain type of crime that you mostly respond to. What types of crimes in general? I don't want to know about any particular incidences, but
sure.
Just in general, what types of crimes you face, like say in a typical month, would you expect, do you face a lot of burglaries, do you face break-ins, you know, what is it mostly you deal with?
And those types of incidents can be seasonal as well. I mean, yeah, certainly I can say when the temperature starts to go up, we see, you know, differences in the types of crimes that we're responding to. We do put out an annual report every year, and, you know, overwhelmingly, the number of crimes that we deal with the most are assault. You know, and that's, Maryland only has 2 degrees of assault, so just a first and second. So second encompasses a lot of things, whether it be domestic disturbances. That's always a something that we respond to quite a bit in the county. you know, a certain affray that happens within two individuals, things of that nature. That's, you know, overwhelmingly every year that winds up being the top number in the category of crimes that we have in the county. But certainly burglary is right up there as well. I mean, that winds up being, you know, somebody breaking in, whether it be to a house or maybe just some type of business or things of that nature, where they're, you know, stealing things. And you know, oftentimes I think many of those types of crimes are often linked to drug abuse as well. So drug possession is another one that we do have a lot of dealings with individuals with they're having drugs on them. And currently in Maryland, it's taken away. We no longer do an on-view arrest of an individual, so actually putting handcuffs on them and taking them to the station for having a possession amount of drugs on their person. That is now a criminal citation. So we issue a citation to an individual that has, let's say, two caps of fentanyl on their person, and they have a court date, and in most cases those individuals are geared towards some type of rehabilitation program. So that's been the focus as of late. The trend that you're seeing crime wise appears to be going down, but that has a lot to do with the changes in the laws. Marijuana was when I first started with the sheriff's office was something that accounted for I'm getting a little specific, but in UCR, it's like a part two offense, less serious type offense. That was always the highest category that we had, you know, with those types of things. And so that obviously with the legalization of that changed and brought a lot of the crime, which appears to be down, but it's really just not affected any longer. It's no longer a crime. So, but for the most part, just dealing with individuals that have conflict with others, we get pretty good at being able to be mediators a lot of times, and we have a lot of different trainings on that to be able to help out. But you know, it certainly does. You know, from time to time, we have to take some on-view arrest of individuals. One thing that I'd like to touch on is mental illness in the county, and it's everywhere. But we document all of our uses of force on what we call a response to resistance form. We've changed over to response to resistance because I don't think we mentioned this, but we're a CALEA accredited agency. CALEA is a national certification recognizing professional standards of law enforcement. Sheriff Price got that started back in 2003, and we have continued with that practice, recognized that we are the first sheriff's office on the Eastern Shore that went to CALEA. So they recognize that professional standards in policing, and we have been a part of that since 2003, and we continue to be a part of that. That certainly helps to make sure that we're at the top of the standards where we need to be a professional law enforcement agency. And it's something that we're actually pretty proud of at the Kent County Sheriff's Office, that we're a part of that. And we, if you're ever to look at the actual printed out copy of our manual and procedure book, you could do some weightlifting with it because it's so heavy. But for the most part, crime-wise, you know, day-to-day, that's what we're dealing with for most time. Oftentimes, conflict, drugs, and thefts and burglaries.
Yeah. We're dealing with. I would imagine the use of force, that's got to be a tough decision when you're in the middle of a situation there, because there's a lot of things to consider. You know, you first of all, you don't know who the person is that you're dealing with. You don't know how violent that person can be. Yeah. You don't know the strength of the person. Also, you don't even know the medical condition of that person. You know, you don't know if use of force is going to cause a heart attack or cause something else in that person. So it's got to be a tough decision, and you don't have a lot of time to think about it.
No. I started to touch on that, but emergency petitions are something that we use for a person that's having a mental crisis to be able to take them to the hospital. Over 50% of my use of force incidents from the deputies last year were all around emergency petitions or mental illness. So that is a serious problem that we have in this county, and I'm sure everywhere, you know, is mental illness. And the fact that these individuals, even if they're institutionalized for a month, they're right back out again, and they ask that individual to make sure they take their medications, which oftentimes doesn't make them feel very good. So they wind up not taking the medication. I think some of the things that you heard about in the news about reimagining policing, well, they were reimagining and having, mental health providers and social workers and all that type of be a part of the policing process. We haven't seen any of that. You know, we're still the ones that are answering. You know, when you call 911 and there's somebody having some type of mental crisis, it's going to be the police that come. And sometimes wearing this uniform doesn't make the situation better. So it's not something that we ask to do. It's something that we have to do because we're the only ones out there to do it. And, I was working and knew the individual in Centerville that was police officers that were killed in Centerville back in 2001. And that was all around an individual with mental illness. So we don't want to deal with these individuals, but we're the only ones out there to do it. So we do, and like I said, 50% of my use of force cases were all involving mental illness.
Yeah, you almost have to be a counselor besides a policeman as well out there too. You know, in the domestic violence cases, it's got to be really tough because you never know what the right thing is to do in something like that either. And I always think about how difficult it is to try to assess a situation and to how do I really handle this, and then do I press and push use of force on a person? Do I back off? It's got to be a very tough decision, and it is so prone to second guessing.
Yeah.
Because once it's all over with, well, why did you do that? Why did you do that? Well, man, at the time, it seemed like the right thing to do. You know, maybe in hindsight, I would have handled it differently, but you don't have that. You don't have that luxury.
Well, Larry, we also have, remember, and I wore it today, so you make sure you could see it. We have body cameras on us. And, whenever some type of potential incident that's occurring, the body camera's rolling the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, so it gives the entire story from beginning, not some quick segment of where an officer's suddenly grabbing on somebody and throwing them to the ground. We're getting to see from beginning to end, you know, the whole thing. So we welcome the body cameras. We welcome that because we want to be able to have people see the whole thing. And there's been plenty of cases where the prosecutor's office, state attorney's office, will say, I'm just going to play the body camera.
Yeah.
And we'll let the people see it.
Yeah, that to me, I agree. I think that makes all the sense in the world because very often when you see a violent confrontation, you see the people that are taking pictures of it with their cell phone around the situation, and they're taking the pictures at the point where it's going beyond control.
Yeah.
Because they want the sensationalism at that point. Nobody really is taking pictures of what's leading up to that situation to make it out of control.
Right.
And very often it's the way you can look at something like that. So, yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think
we welcome it.
Make a lot
I mean,
of sense.
There's been complaints that have been quickly squashed because they know we have body cameras, and I'll tell them that, I've looked at the body camera. I don't know what you're talking about, and all of a sudden I don't hear from them anymore. So, we started that program back in 2021. We're not mandated to have it until 2025, but we felt it was necessary to try to have that as soon as possible because, the people were sort of expecting that part of the transparency of policing. And like I said, we welcome it, and it can be stressful. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be stressful. They ask sometimes for the police to be sort of like robots at times, you know, but they do get excited. They do use some profanity from time to time,
which is
not something we should do, but that happens from time to time. But for the most part, you know, we're trying to make sure we're doing the right things. And sometimes the realities of using physical force on an individual is not nice to look at.
Right.
And it affects people and some people in many ways to be able to say, why did you have to do these things? Well, many cases we have to do it because there's a specific reason why.
Okay. Well, we got a couple of minutes left in the show. Future look bright?
Absolutely. You know, I got a great group of people that work for me, and we're doing good things in the community all the time. A lot of social functions. People ask us to do different things, have us go out to different things. But overall, I feel very fortunate to work in Kent County. I think we have a community that supports their police. And having community members that are supportive of the police, that means a lot to me and to the deputies that are out there doing the job. Because like you said it earlier, it's tough at times to be out there and do this job and feel like there's so much negative with it. But our community here in Kent County, they're very supportive of the police. And we're very fortunate to have that, and I thank them for having that.
Well, I, for one, I'm grateful for you guys. I really am. And it's a different story here than where I used to be. When I used to drive around the roads in New York, I'd see a police car behind me, and immediately get nervous. Around here, I see a police car around me, and it's just another person. I wave, and that's it. I think you guys are doing a great job.
I feel comfortable.
I feel safe in this community, and definitely appreciate you being out there, and I'm happy to see you driving around out there. Dennis, thank you so much for being my guest this morning. I really appreciate you being here. I'd also like to thank my sponsors, Heron Point, Chester River Pharmacy, Compass Regional Hospice, and Prince Limousine. This is 106.9 WCTR, and if it's Sunday morning, you've been listening to My Generation.